97.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
You are listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, the HIV Hour will be slightly different for now. Everyone on the show is dedicated to keep broadcasting, keeping you informed with the latest HIV stories, the coronavirus, and great music too. You can contact us at hiv@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Instagram, hiv_hour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on a Monday and Tuesday at noon. Or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com. So thanks for tuning in for tonight's show. It's very challenging times for us at the moment, so we appreciate you taking the time to listen. On today's show, we've got a few good stories. Sue's going to be talking about how hepatitis C cases have fallen in the UK. We're also going to listen to Cole's story, his experiences about HIV.
It's really hard at the moment to find some good news that is happening around HIV and anything else at the moment with the COVID virus going along. But we have on the HIV Hour, we aim to sort of please our listeners, and we have got some good news. Apparently, new Hep C cases are down by almost 70% in HIV positive men. Now, this is a study they've done in London and Brighton. An analysis of five clinics found 378 cases were diagnosed between 2013 and 2018. New infections peaked at 14 per 1,000 people. A study that was done in 2015, falling to 4 per 1,000 by 2018. Now, the study is published in the Clinical Infection Diseases. Now, they believe that if this progress can be maintained, London will be on track to achieve the target set out by the British HIV Association to absolutely eliminate Hep C completely in people with HIV by 2021. I mean, what a fantastic bit of news. I mean, as we more or less all know, Hep C can sometimes cause serious liver disease and remains a major cause of global mortality. So greater screening is needed. So, I mean, I've got a couple of very good friends, actually, that actually cleared Hep C a couple of years ago. I mean, HIV is enough, isn't it, guys? You know, I know some of us do live with other co-infections, but, you know, we're on the brink again to eradicate this Hep C. And it's good to have some good news with all the sort of depressing news out there at the moment. So that's good, isn't it?
Great story, Sue. Just to say, I had hepatitis C about 9 years ago now. So I did the treatment, the interferon and the injections. At that time, it took a year, so it was quite an intense thing to do, actually. But I got through it. I cleared the Hep C. Now the regimes for Hep C is a lot shorter. I think it's about 12 weeks now that you do the treatment.
Staying with the theme of hepatitis, another piece of welcome news out just recently. It's regarding HIV PrEP. Also prevents hepatitis B and works better than the hepatitis B vaccine. Now, we did have some also good news just a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, about the National Health Service finally rolling out PrEP to people that need and require it. That has been a long-awaited drug that we've been wanting to be rolled out, already been rolled out in Scotland and Wales. So we actually did get the go ahead for that to happen. Now, apparently the HIV PrEP also prevents hepatitis B in this recent research and works better than the hepatitis B vaccine. Now, a retrospective cohort study of gay and bisexual men attending sexual health clinics in Japan shows that taken HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is the proper name, PrEP, not only protects against HIV, but also against infection with hepatitis B, reducing the risk of it nearly tenfold. Now, the study was presented at the Conference on Retrovirus and Opportunist Infections in 2020. Now, this is considerably greater risk reduction than that provided by getting vaccinated against hepatitis B. Now, however, what they're saying, the researchers emphasised that hepatitis B vaccination was still important for people at risk, as it is prevented a half of the infections, even when it did not prevent infection. It reduced hepatitis B symptoms to almost nothing. Now, PrEP involves two antiviral drugs, tenofovir and disproxil. I hope I've pronounced that right. Both of which are active against HIV and also hepatitis B and A. Previous study in Japan had found that people with HIV who had prescribed either tenofovir or lamivudine, usually both, as part of their antiviral therapy, had 1/10 of the risk of hepatitis B infection than other people not on antiviral drugs, and 1/8 of the risk of those taking ART drugs, antiviral therapy, that did not feature either of those drugs. Now, as we, you know, we need to be clear, you know, hepatitis B affects the kidneys, so it can be quite detrimental to, regardless whether you've got HIV or not. So it's another step forward, you know, of this fantastic medication we are taking. And I know we're going to be talking about in the weeks ahead on the HIV hour with the coronavirus and giving you updates that we all need and want. And about some of our fantastic HIV medications going into some of these drug trials. And we're going to be doing a bit more research into that. There's some really great things happening out there in research and finding vaccines. And some of those are including, as what I've read so far, are some of our HIV medications. So watch this space.
Radio Reverb. HIV Hour, supported by the Rainbow Fund. Providing information about living positively with the virus.
Hi, my name is Carl, and I'm going to be telling you a little story about myself, how I contracted HIV in 2011. I'm going to start the story by just saying that I'd become quite poorly at the time. I'd had what I now know was seroconversion, which is when HIV entered inside my body, broke it down and went into my immune system. What happened was I had sores in my nose, sores in my mouth, a rash, night sweats, fever, diarrhea, the whole thing, my whole body just collapsed. And I remember this particular weekend that I was quite poorly, and it had, you know, we've all had sniffs and coughs and stuff, and they keep you in bed for, you know, a day or two, but this was slightly different. And I think the thing that was slightly different was the night sweats that I'd had. The night sweats were really intense, where they sort of drenched the whole of my duvet cover, me, my pillows, everything. And the day after I had my worst night sweat, I took myself to my local GP and he actually gave me 7 days antibiotics to go home with and see how I got on. And I remember taking these tablets, and halfway through the week, I just wasn't getting any better. I could just feel myself just actually getting worse. So I'd booked another appointment with the doctor and said, look, you know, this isn't shifting. Is there anything else we can do? I feel worse. And he just said, no, you've just got to let the antibiotics sort of take their steps and it'll soon sort itself out. So I was like, okay, you know, fair enough. And I got myself into bed and you know, nursed myself. And this was when I was living in Manchester. I live in Brighton now, but I'd had a bit of a break from Brighton and I'd gone to Manchester for a couple of years. And I remember speaking to a friend of mine on the phone in Brighton. He's my best friend. And I told him that I wasn't feeling great and what I'd just gone through and how I was feeling. And he goes, that sounds really similar to what a friend of his had just gone through. And but he was diagnosed with HIV. And I was like, all right. And he said, why don't you go for a HIV test? And I was like, I don't think I need an HIV test. But yeah, I put the phone down to him and it actually got me thinking. I'd just come out of a 7-year relationship with a guy and I'd recently become single. Living in Manchester as a single guy and I had unprotected sex 4 times. And I actually did think to myself, actually, my mate's right. I think I should take myself for a test. And I'd gone to a charity in Manchester called Body Positive, who are sadly not around anymore. But they were an amazing charity across the country. And I'd gone to this place to have a test. And I remember going into the room and the consultant in front of me said, so why are you here today? I said, well, I haven't been feeling great and I have had some unprotected sex in my time and maybe it's time for me to have a HIV test. So he said, right, okay. And he said, what would it mean to you if you got a positive result today? And I was like, I don't really know. I'm sure I'll deal with it. But I'm sure I'll be fine and everything will be okay. So he took a finger prick test where they take a tiny bit of blood from your finger, drop it on a strip of paper, one dot comes up, HIV is not detected, but 2 dots come up and HIV is detected. And he said, let's wait 20 minutes. So he took me out into the waiting room, waited 20 minutes and came back in. And before I'd even sat my bum on the chair, he came out with it and said, Carl, I'm afraid you're HIV positive. And, oh, gosh, taking myself back to that particular day is, yeah, it's quite difficult because I was on my own. I didn't take a friend with me, which, looking back, I wish I had now. And I was like, okay, well, I'm HIV, what next? What do I do? I had, you know, tears in my eyes. I was very confused. I assumed that it happened to other people, that it wouldn't happen to me. And that was the complacency I had with the reason why I contracted HIV, I suppose. So they gave me some leaflets and, you know, information, and they actually asked me to come back the next day to go to Manchester General Infirmary because that was just an indication that HIV is detected in your body. The next step, it was to sort of find out exactly how much HIV is in my body. Is it at danger point? Should I start medication and so on? So I remember going out of the building and going into my car and turning the radio on, and the radio just came on automatically, and it was a really weird song. It was the song Taking Your Life from Negative to Positive, and it was Pitbull. of all strange things. And that song came on and the lines sprung out as soon as I turned my engine on, which was taking your life from negative to positive. And I'll remember that song forever. And I remember driving out of the car park of the hospital, of the charity of where I had the HIV test, and I couldn't see the road because I was crying that much. And I thought, I can't do this now. I need to pull over. And I remember the first person that I rang was actually my ex-partner's mum. I was really close with her, even though my other, you know, me and my ex-partner weren't together. We were still very close, and I was very close to her. And I just phoned her up and I said, look, darling, I've just been diagnosed with HIV and I don't know what to do. I'm crying and this and that. I don't know. And she calmed me down and she goes, you know, you've got to get yourself home, get yourself a cup of tea and you know, and take on the information as you can. And I got in the car, and I drove off and I got home and I didn't speak to anybody. And I remember crying myself to sleep that particular night. I was pretty lucky because I had two dogs at the time and they were definitely my main companions through being told that you're living with HIV. And I just want to tell people one of the main reasons why I did break down so much was because I didn't have any information about HIV. I most certainly wasn't taught it in school. And it just wasn't something that was talked about in my family as well. I was around in the 80s when the tombstones and the government kind of what they wanted to get across about HIV. I remember those kind of messages, but nothing else. Definitely no positive messages living with HIV. So that's why at the time I was quite distraught about it. So the next morning I got up, went to the hospital and they took my bloods and they said that my CD4 count, which is an indicator of how much HIV is in your body, was not at danger point. And they actually confirmed that day that I'd actually been quite lucky in the respect of that I'd actually caught my HIV diagnosis really quickly. I could sort of pin it back to about a month and a half before to picking up the virus. So, you know, I was diagnosed pretty quickly. I think I would have been pretty distressed and distraught that if I'd not gone for a HIV test and I had gone out there and I had had unprotected sex with someone and passed the virus on, I don't think I could have lived with myself. So I'm glad I got tested early and I found out what I was living with and that it wasn't flu. It was HIV entering in my body. And I just, you know, remember going home that day and there's so many questions that I went to the hospital for, you know, to ask the nurses, and I didn't end up asking them not even one single question. I was just taking everything in, and the guys at the hospital were amazing. They gave me some information. They gave me some local charities in Manchester. It was actually GHT, which is the George House Trust in Manchester, and I contacted them, and I started to go to groups that, with people that were in the same situation as me. I was a gay man living with HIV, and I just wanted to be with people around that were dealing with that situation as well. So at this point, I hadn't really told any of my friends and family. It took me about a week to sort of get my head together before I could even divulge the information to anybody else. And I think there's always a reason why you would tell someone that you're living with HIV. Is it going to benefit them? Is it going to make them worry too much? Are they going to think that you're dying? And there's all those things that, you know, roll around your head when you think about that you may tell somebody. And rightly or wrongly, I picked on my mum and dad, and I thought, right, I'm going to tell my mum and dad that I'm living with HIV before anybody else of my friends and family. And I remember the day really well. It was the 23rd of July 2011, and sadly, that was the day that Amy Winehouse passed away And I remember waking up that particular morning, turning the telly on, and an amazing star had died too early in my books. And it was quite sad, but this particular day was the day that I'd chosen. My family were coming from Scotland, and it was a family gathering, so I thought ideal opportunity to just sort of sit them down and tell them. And I went to the house, and I was expecting my sister to be there, and because I wanted to tell everybody together, and she wasn't. She was at the cinema with my nephew, and my mum just knew there was something on my mind. She could tell that mother's intuition that Carl wanted to say something, and she kept badgering me, and she was like, go on, you've obviously come round for a reason. You've obviously want to tell me something. What, you know, what is that? And I was like, Mum, please just leave me. I just wanted to wait for my sister to arrive. I didn't know how long she was going to be. So my mum left the room, and then my dad came in. And he was like, your mum said there's something wrong with you. Can you tell your mum what's wrong with you? And I was like, gosh, I'm getting it all from all angles here. So I thought, right, I don't know how long my sister's going to be. So I sat them down at the table, the dining table. And I said, right, Mum, OK, I'm going to tell you something. I'm living with HIV, and I want to know you to know that I'm OK, and I'm going to be OK. And I left it at that. There was a very long silence where my mum and dad were gathering their thoughts. I was gathering my thoughts. And my mum stood up at the kitchen table with her head bowed down. And I remember a tear rolling down her face and hitting the table. And I'll remember that day to the day I die. And I remember my dad just looking at me and saying, you're still my son. And then he walked off into the living room and put the telly on. And that was his way of dealing with his son's diagnosis. And then my sister came in and saw me crying and saw my mum and dad crying. And my sister perked up and she went, oh gosh, you've heard about Amy Winehouse dying then, have you? And I was like, oh no, it's not. That's not the reason why we're crying. But, you know, that is sad. But you know, I need to tell you something. And she said, what? And I said, well, I've just told Mum and Dad I'm living with HIV. And my sister started crying instantly. And my mum then perked up and said, get him out of the room, get him out of the room. And she was actually talking to my nephew. She didn't want my 8-year-old nephew to hear the information. And she said, I don't want him picking up anything. And that was my mum. That was from my mum. That was the discrimination directly from my mum, which was quite hard to deal with. But at the same time, I didn't blame her because she also had no information about HIV. If you think about when my mum and dad were at school, did they have any sex education about HIV? Like I didn't. They probably didn't. So I understood why my mum said that, and she thought that I could pass on HIV to my nephew, but that gave me a kind of base to sort of then go, right, well, this is how I need to educate right now. So I did. It took me about an hour and a half to sit my mum and dad down round the table, got everyone round the table again, my sister, my brother-in-law, and I just... you know, what I've probably missed out is in the 2 weeks that I'd gathered my thoughts about HIV, I'd also done a lot of research about HIV myself to find out about HIV. I didn't want to just approach my whole family and then just have no information about it at all. So I told them everything about what my consultants had said and, you know, and you know, I told them everything. And at the end of it, I remember my mum saying to me, would it be okay if me and your dad come to you, your next HIV appointment, please? And I was like, yeah, this is definitely, I have no problems with you coming to that. And they did. They stuck by their word. And I remember I had an appointment about 2 weeks after that, and they come with me, and my mum took time off work, and they sat there, and they the consultant was a bit confused because it was meant to be for a meeting between me and my consultant, but my mum and dad had so many questions that ended up being about them and how they wanted to deal with HIV. But it was really interesting because the consultant was... He wanted to speak to my mum and dad. He wanted to reassure them as well that Carl's going to be fine. He's going to lead a normal life. Life expectancy is normal and so on. So I was quite pleased that they did come along because it took my job away of trying to confirm that I was going to lead a normal life.
This is the world of Radio Reverb.
That was just a snippet of Carl's story. So if you want to check out the full version, you can go to Spotify or iTunes, type in HIV Hour, and you'll come up with all the podcasts we've got on there. So there's a lot of previous shows, and there's a couple of HIV Hour stories, and one's Carl. So check them out. So this is a bit of sad news in these times. A Herefordshire HIV charity faces closure after 30 years as coronavirus holds fundraising. So this charity, which supports hundreds of Herefordshire HIV patients, said the coronavirus pandemic could face it to close within 6 weeks after more than 30 years of service. The CEO of the Crescent in St Albans, Ian Matag, I hope I've got that right, Matei, said the inability to hold fundraising events has left the charity with no income. Since the coronavirus put an end to public gatherings, he said income has fallen off a cliff. It's disappeared. Without any income, we'll be closed probably a month and a half from now. The charity provides support to roughly 300 HIV patients, some of whom need attention almost daily, he said. The charity's service includes collecting shopping for patients with mobility problems, transferring them to and from medical appointments, and providing them with counselling. It runs a drop-in service, which is currently closed due to the pandemic, and it helps people get tested and gives them out free condoms to prevent the spread of HIV. In 2016, the Crescent received the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service. They had regular bucket collections at train stations, but that's had to be cancelled. And also fundraising music events and a quiz night. So all these things add up. So there's no money coming into the charity. The Crescent was founded in 1988. It's been going for a long time. And it's sad that the coronavirus has taken its toll on a lot of the charities and things that have been going for ages, which help so many people. So if you'd like to donate, there's a website you can do that at, which is www.thecrescent.org.uk. So here's a good story from America. The $2 trillion coronavirus stimulus package, which was approved by Congress and signed by President Trump, includes $155 million for HIV programs. According to the Washington Blade, the Ryan White HIV AIDS program will receive a $90 million boost, whilst housing opportunities for persons with AIDS will receive $65 million boost. The Ryan White HIV AIDS program, which is administrated by the Health Resources and Services Administration, serves 500,000 people. More than half of the people living with diagnosed HIV in the United States. It provides essential support services and medications to low-income HIV-positive people who are uninsured. I think in this country we are very lucky to have an amazing NHS, and that's something we don't have to worry about in those circumstances. So it must be quite difficult for people who aren't insured in America. So Lauren Killaley, who is the Director of Public Policy at the National AIDS Housing Coalition in America, housing opportunities for persons with AIDS can not only provide permanent housing, but also short-term assistance, as well as critical supports like access to transportation and nutrition services. So people living with HIV could be at higher risk of contracting COVID-19, the disease that's caused by the new coronavirus. This is if they're not receiving appropriate care and are in need of housing. I know in these times of we have to self-distance and self-isolate, a lot of people will feel very anxious, very stressed out and alone probably. So there's things you can do. There's people you can contact if you need some support, if you feel isolated, anxious. Mind Out LGBTQ, the mental health service. So you can speak to a Mind Out member. But this is in Brighton, in the Sussex area. So their number is 01273 234 839. Also, you can go on their website, which is info@mindout.org.uk. Also, the Samaritans are an amazing charity. You can give them a call, 116 123, and that's for free, and you'll be able to speak to someone in person. Also, Mind. They gave great advice. Actually, the Mind website is amazing, actually. It gives you strategies on how to cope when you're feeling isolated or you have mental issues coming up, because I personally feel like that. I get anxious and from time to time, and I live on my own, and I felt, actually, sometimes I felt I'm losing it. And these are really good people to contact. So their number is 0300 123 3393, and the email is info@mind.org.uk, and their website, which is a great website to get some tips on how to keep yourself active and supported, is mind.org.uk. And some more community news, just to update on the Lawson unit. They're currently conducting all appointments by telephone. If you have a routine blood test, they are cancelled unless it's deemed essential, and they will contact you if you need to attend. So please ensure that you have at least 1 month's supply of medication, and call 01273 664722 if you haven't, unless you have a doctor's appointment booked already in the next 3 weeks. Also, again, if you want to speak to someone about HIV and maybe the coronavirus or your sexual health, the Terence Higgins Trust have a direct helpline. So that is 0808 802 1221. And you can email them at info@tht.org.uk. So that's it for another week. Thank you for tuning in. Everyone at HIV Hour and Radio Reverb wish you well. Take care and stay strong.
I conferred with our furry friend. Radio Reverb.